When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, BT and Sal back on the Fan. You know, Saturday night, I'm in Dallas, and I get an alert on my phone, and, you know, you see the news about Lou Kardasek passing away. And, you know, it's not tragic because the man was 99, but boy, it hit me, man. I'm not going to lie. It hit me. I think many of you who've listened to me over the years and obviously follow my work with St. John's, and not just me, but you growing up here and knowing what Louis meant to you and everything he meant for the Big East and just his amazing class, personality, and giving nature. He was one of a kind. So want to talk about Lou a little bit, and who better to do that with than a New York kid, obviously, born and raised here, coached the Knicks, obviously coaching the Johnnies now, and that is head coach Rick Pitino on the Fan with BT and Sal. Coach, how you doing today, buddy? What's happening?
I'm good, thank you. A little, it was a tough day for everybody at St. John's. Me personally, I don't know what it was. I lost three friends in one day, two very close friends, Father Ed Bradley, who sat on my bench at Kentucky and Louisville for every game, and one of my best friends down in South Miami, a singer from the late 60s, Steve Alamo. And then I got the news late at night, and Lou, I said, what a day. And I couldn't believe it. And, you know, with Lou, like you said, all three of these gentlemen all lived great lives. And as Catholics, two great things that we have, one is confession, and the second thing is that we believe that a life when passing is to be celebrated. And there's no better way than to take a glass of wine, take a soft drink, take a drink, and just say, here's to Lou for the next 10 years for St. John's fans, because Lou epitomized what John Wooden was to UCLA and what Lou is to St. John's, or Mike Kay is to Duke. He epitomized all the great things about St. John's.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, humble, hardworking, just cared about the players more than himself, and just a special, special man.
He's the best, man, and well said, Coach. You know, and you know this, but for those who might not know, you're a little bit too young, whatever, 2 years at Providence, one of which you went to the Final Four, you obviously coached against Louis, and so many of the conversations about Coach are about his giving nature and his witty nature and his self-deprecation. But what was it like coaching against him from, matching the wits, the basketball wits? What was Louis like on the bench during a game?
Louis was very intense, never sat down, hated officials, but didn't show. You would never pick out his hatred. It would be under his breath. You would never know he hated officials. And he was very intense, had 3-hour practices, sometimes 3.5-hour practices that the players talked about, going over half-court sets over and over and over. He said to me this summer, my first year, he said, he's watching practice and he just called me over. And I said, what's Lou? And he had the raspy voice at that time. He said, do you believe in water breaks? and I said, yeah, coach, that's a good idea. Everybody break for water. And then he said to me, Listen, from Buck Freeman on, we wear long pants. I had shorts on. It was 80 degrees, and I coach in my gym shorts. And he said, St. John's, we wear long pants. Buck Freeman always wore it. I said, Coach, just let me know when you're coming. I'll put my long pants on.
Don can't wear shorts, Rick. You know that. You know the rules.
But during the game, we had a great game my first year. We won at the buzzer. But Louis was going ballistic, saying there was 1 second left on the clock. The ball was out of bounds. Louis was probably right. There probably was 1 second. I told my guys, get in the locker room. I never forget this. I ripped the shirt off of Billy Donovan. I said, get in the shower. Hurry up. Take your shoes off. And Timmy Higgins and another official come in, and I got two guys, Delray Brooks and Billy, I threw in the shower. And the referee says, we have 1 second left. You got to come out. I said, my guys are in the shower, Timmy. We're not coming back out. And they looked in the shower and saw Billy and Delray, I believe it was, in there. And he said, do your players always shower with their socks on? And I said, Billy, what do you take your socks off? And we didn't come out. And Louis went crazy on that. And then also that year, I think it was at Providence, Delray was the second year. That was that game. The first year, I remember the game at Providence because I told Billy Donovan to foul Walter Berry because we had a foul to give. And he picked up the ball barely over half court, and Billy reached in, only shot the ball. Much like that game the other night, uh-huh, where they didn't give it the Northwestern game.
Yeah.
And they gave Walter Berry two free throws because as he was reaching it, he went through a shooting motion. And I said, okay, don't worry about it. Walter's a 65% foul shooter. Just make sure we block out. And then we lost that game in overtime. So we had great games, games that you go back and you scratch your head about because it was so close. And then I think the last game I coached against Louis was in the Big East tournament when Mark Jackson was there. And that was the year we went to the Final Four at Providence. But great games, great coach, great person. One of the few people I've met in my life in the coaching profession that you nobody ever said a bad word about. And that's quite, you know, you can write a book with the bad words about me. But with Lou, you know, nobody would ever say a bad word. Kind person, giving person. When you beat him, he gave you that one handshake, looked you in the eye, and said, good luck, and looked you in the eye. When he beat you, he looked you in the eye, and he shook with two hands. He took his other hand and put it on your forearm. He was much happier at that moment.
Coach, you guys going to be doing anything to honor Lou Cornacek? You going to be wearing any sweaters with those shorts of yours, or what?
Oh, nice.
Well, I'm sure we're going to have a patch of some symbol with Lou. They're working on it now. We're going to have a big thing on campus, Memorial Mass for Lou, which myself and the whole team obviously will be at. But, you know, I think just for St. John's fans, you'll always tell stories about Lou because of what he represented. You know, I, along with all the other coaches that coached here, are caretakers of Lou's legacy. That's all we are. We're just caretakers at St. John's of what Lou built. And I'm very proud to be a caretaker of Lou's legacy.
Well, and you have an opportunity to do something special here. As you know, this program has been down. Really, I think one of the reasons why, and I know Cornacek was a great coach, but he was the last guy to really make St. John's a relevant big-time program. You have that opportunity in front of you, Coach. So being that he's passed away now, you know, just shy of turning 100 and maybe a chance to get this team back into the tournament this time, how much does that mean in regards to the legacy of Lou Cornacek?
It means quite a bit. You know, we are not where I had the Kentucky-Louisville program yet, but we're on our way. We're on our way. We're getting better talent, better athletes, and we're on our way. This year it'll be an interesting year because what I thought was going to be a much better league, and certainly it's better from the bottom. DePaul right now is undefeated, but it's early on, it's not as strong at the, in certain areas.
Yeah.
So we got to take care of business because, you know, I think Providence will get a lot better when Hopkins comes aboard. He's one of the premier players in the league. Certainly, Connecticut had their struggles, but they played three tough games, and they're all new. People forget this is not the championship team that Connecticut had last year, but they have great talent that, like the rest of us, has to be molded. Because they're not all back. And certainly, Daniel molded them into a very good basketball team. Xavier's very good. Creighton, when they get healthy, will be very good. Marquette probably is playing the best basketball right now. And DePaul, certainly a big improvement. So the league will get stronger as the season goes along. But right now, we've got a big game with Kansas State, who will be the most talented team that we have faced top to bottom so far this season.
Wait, they got more talent than Baylor? Really?
They do. They do. Oh, physical talent.
Wow.
They go very deep. We don't go by the scores.
Uh-huh.
They probably have one of the, they have a very large salary cap, let's put it that way. it's crazy that I would ever repeat this in my coaching career, that college players have a large salary cap. But they got Coleman, from Illinois, I believe it was, who's outstanding. Gessen's outstanding 6'9", 6'10 player. Housen from Villanova shooting the lights out. Doug McDaniel, who killed us at Michigan last year as a backup point. They got a Cora Gore, Max Jones. They got Rich, a great power forward. So they're very deep. They're the deepest, most talented team.
Okay.
And they're very, very athletic. And what they do is all weakness. That's the thing that scares me most, is they are a great three-point shooting team. They shoot almost 39%, 38.2% from the three. Great shooting team, and we've got to make sure we haven't. If there's one area that we have failed at so far in the early season, is we haven't defended the 3-point shot well.
So Rick, I talked to Rick Pitino, of course, head coach St. John's, BT and Sal. We know you're a big Yankee fan. I want to get your thoughts on Soto in a minute. I want to get your thoughts on the Knicks defense, because I know you watch the Knicks still every night when they play. But I want to get back to something that Sal asked you and just kind of follow up a little bit. Now, I've watched you run practice and the intensity in which you coach. We've all seen that during the games. And we all know that you're possessed to win and absolutely overtaken by the sport of basketball. It just pumps through your body. So wanting to win more is almost hard for somebody like you. But maybe pressure's not the right word. But don't you feel a little extra, I'll use the word burden, to win for Louis, if that makes sense? Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, punch through for Louis this year?
Yeah, I said, I think from the first day on the job, I felt that way. I felt that way with replacing Denny Crum at Louisville. I don't think you can get caught up. I think you want to do it the way that Louis would want to do it, the right way. And that's play great basketball. So I think it's a self-inflicted pressure with me that you just want to win every possession almost, but you have to understand the human weaknesses that players will have today. It's a little bit of an entitlement. You look at the Knicks and people say they're not playing defense. Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I watch a lot of pro basketball. Nobody's really playing defense anymore. It's become a three-point, I wouldn't say joke. I think the analytics are such with the NBA that they're saying that, look, the shot within 5 feet or the three-point shot is better than the Kevin Durant ball fake two-point shot.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I think the
watch.
Analytics come into it's not
it's
really
tough,
fun.
Rick.
I mean, it's not. I'm not as big a fan as I was 2 or 3 years ago, because it's just up and down three-point shooting, up and down three-point shooting. And it's not the Knicks' poor defense, because Tibbs is a great defensive coach. It's just the philosophy of the game. You know, it's you down the pick and roll. You know, you force him to his weak end, and if you're too far back, you're going to shoot a three. The transition game is no longer Magic Johnson coming down a look-away pass for a layup or a dunk.
Yeah.
It's to pull up for a three. So it's not as much fun. I was in a meeting with David Stern, called a meeting with UB Brown, Pat Riley, Chuck Daly, myself, and a couple of GMs, and he wanted to change the game. It was too physical, and only at that time, only one team was breaking 100 points. And we went through everything possible to try and get more scoring in the game. And really what we came up with at the end is, got to call more fouls. The players will get used to it. They won't play as aggressive on the ball or off the ball and chucking people. More freedom of movement, and you'll get more scoring in the game. So from that point, at that meeting with David Stern, to where it is today, now you've got every team scoring 130, 120, and it's no longer the defense being played.
All right, so how do you correct that now, Coach?
somewhere in the middle lies the truth. You now have to get more physical play back in the game, less fouls called, and get more defense into the game where teams are averaging 112, 114, yep. not 125, not 130. So the correction that David Stern made that night with that meeting evolved into something that you see today, and now you have to revert back to the old days when Michael Jordan played, and it was very physical.
BT and Sal, we're on the Fan with Coach Rick Pitino. Is there anything that you learned? You say you watch a lot of the pro basketball game. Are you learning still, even at your age, even with your experience as a coach? You're taking anything that you see in the current NBA and applying it to what you do with St. John's?
I'll tell you where I learned the most about basketball. It's two areas. 2 years with UB Brown taught me how to prepare for a game almost like a scientist. That was one. And two, going to the EuroLeague in Europe, where it's like, it's great college players at 30 and 32 years of age. The ball, if you want to see great basketball, watch a EuroLeague game. The cutting, the passing, the backdoors, the bounce passes. So I learned, if you ask me, my learning curve in my 50 years of coaching, the 2 years with UB Brown, I learned the most in preparing for a game, the preparation, the analytics behind preparing for a game. And the EuroLeague taught me so much more about good offense, good movement, good player movement, good ball movement. And I really, really, at 65, went over to Europe and not only traveled to countries I've never experienced in my life, but also learned so much about basketball.
That's awesome. All right, so we know you're a big Yankee fan. You go to all the playoff games, even though you've thrown out the first pitch in Queens as well. I get it. You got to work both sides of the aisle, man.
I mean, come on, Coach. Your team is in Queens. You should be a Met fan, for goodness sake. What the heck?
I'm not an anti-Met fan. I am a Met fan.
He's like me.
Remember, I grew up sitting in the bleachers with Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, Yogi Berra, Johnny Blanchard, Hector Lopez in left field.
And then
going up to Krubeck and Richardson days.
Pepitone.
You know, so many, even going to Thurman Munson and, of course, later on with Jeter and so on. I'm a huge Yankee. I'm a season ticket holder. Those are my seats. They're not given to me. I pay my hard-earned money from St. John's.
I like it. Tickets. Yeah, that's right. You do, man. You basically can touch Aaron Judge's bat if you want to reach over. You're so close. So,
Coach, you ever can't get rid of him. He's in BT and South.
That is true. Hook us up, man. And listen, instead of paying me for the TV show that we do, give me those tickets. I'll go me and Sal go.
Anytime you guys want, you can have them.
I believe him. Hey, so do you think, listen, Coach, Cohen's got a ton of, speaking of money, I mean, he can buy every seat in the world, basically, with his $20 billion valuation. You think the Yankees keep Soto?
I think if it's close, he stays. If, you know, it's obvious from the first comment he made after the season. He said, I'm going to listen to everybody. And, you know, it's after a point, if it's $600 million versus $580 million, I think he stays with the Yankees. If it's substantial, with his agent and knowing a lot about his agent, I think he's going to go to where he feels comfortable playing, where he feels he can get the most out of his abilities, and then he'll make the decision on baseball. But if it's not close, it's going to go to the highest bidder. And if that's the Mets, if that's the Red Sox, it'll go that way. I hope it's the Yankees. He's a great player. It's fun to watch him. Just a great hitter. He's very patient at the bat. He doesn't swing at a lot of bad balls, so I hope he stays with the Yankees.
Yeah, so do I. You know, listen, I didn't even think I was going to ask you this, but I'm curious your opinion because, you know, baseball is so mental and almost the harder you try, the worse you do. You know, as a coach, because you're watching the Yankees, obviously, as a Yankee fan, but with a coach's mind, how do you process when a player goes from being the best in the world to looking like he's so average or inferior like Aaron Judge tends to do in October? How does that happen to a pro athlete?
Well, as you know, the tough curveball down the dirt he was swinging at. And I think it's like, I'll use this analogy with coaching. You know, I remember early on at Villanova, they were all over Jay Wright, all over him, that he can't win. And now the guy's a legendary Final Four winner. They said the same thing early on about Coach K, and then he became a gigantic winner. You know, it just takes a little time, and he'll get used to swinging the bat. He'll get used to the curveball. The pressure gets to these guys. You know, it's you're guessing a lot with the pitch count. And before it's over, he'll hit those balls. And there's no doubt in my mind that Judge, like A-Rod. A-Rod, when he first came, was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Striking out a lot, and then he got better. But maybe
he just started taking more steroids. That's why he started hitting Rick.
Well,
I guess Judge
is a great hitter, great person, yep. Great leader. He'll come through. He'll come through. He'll watch. You know, I watch the players as they come back. They study the iPad and they study it. He'll study his weakness of where the ball's going. Be a little more patient with it. And he'll guess right. He'll understand the pitch count. He's a great, great baseball player, and he'll come through for the Yankees. It's just a matter of time. When you have that type of makeup that Judge has, he'll come through. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, Mickey Mantle struck out a lot too, and he'll come through for us. There's no question in my mind.
Coach, did the passing of Karnisek make you reflect on your own legacy one day? I know you've been to plenty of stops, but obviously you've been one of the most successful coaches of all time. Have you had any time to think about your own legacy one day?
You know, I think Lou would say this, and I'll say this now. You know, when you turn 60, I think you get a strong dose of humility over your head like a sledgehammer, and you realize that you're not that substantial. You're really not that as great as you may have thought you were in the 30s. I think that only Lou found it at a young age. I think that my legacy is different than Lou's. My legacy is building a bridge for a lot of different stops for people to cross over. I've had a lot of pros. I've had over 30 assistant coaches become head coaches, a female coach become a head coach. I just think that because I've had so many stops, that if I've built a bridge for people to cross over, that's a great legacy to have. And I treasure that. I think that's a great thing, and I'm hoping I can do that here at St. John's. But let's face it, I am 72, and, you know, it's my longevity at St. John's is not going to be like Lou's. He stayed at one place. I think he went to the Nets for a period of time and then came back to St. John's. So he's had a great run. You know, coaches back then, like Dave Gavitt, Lou Konecki, John Wooden, they retired at a very young age. Now you see Jim Boeheim and some of the other guys that go into their 70s. And
Tom Izzo.
Yep. But, you know, look, a lot of coaches. See, I'm not anti-NIL. Tom Izzo's anti-NIL. Jay Wright was. Tony Bennett was. Anti-portal. I'm not anti that. At all. I think that's just, I felt that we've been making millions of dollars for all those years. The players should make money. So I'm for that. Now, I'm not crazy about the transfer portal because, guys, you know, if I need, I have a backup center from USC that I think is going to be a very good player someday, but it's going to take time and effort. Well, he's going to say, well, look, I'm only playing 10 minutes a game. I'm going to go transfer. They're promising me 30 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
So that part I don't like. But as far as the players being paid, I don't have a problem with that.
There you go. Listen, Rick, really appreciate you hopping on. As you told us at the outset, really sorry for your other losses. It's been a rough weekend for you. It's been a really rough weekend for the St. John's community. But at the end of the day, it's an amazing celebration of one of the iconic figures in New York sports. And, hey, we should all be so lucky to live to 99. So as soon as I saw the news, I said, I got to get Rick on. I need Patino on Monday. Thanks for coming through, man.
Well, guys, raise a toast tonight and say here's to Lou because he deserves it. I think all of New York should toast Lou. Humble, hardworking, great basketball coach, great person, somebody who totally... You know, St. John's is built on kids that don't have money. They work two jobs. 48% of the campus is people who can't afford it, and it's government provided. So it's just hardworking people that need a break in life, and we try to lift people out of poverty. That's the mission of St. John's, and nobody exemplified what the standards of St. John's stood for more than Lou Konecki.
Amen. Salute that with that toast, too. Thank you, Coach. I'll see you soon, bud.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, Coach. All right, there you have it. That was fun talking to Rick Pitino. First time I've had him on BT, so thanks for setting that up. Yep. Obviously, you wish it was under different circumstances. What I was going to say is you think you had a rough week. Wait till you don't make the tournament this year.
Hey,
you better get in.
I'm going to have to crush him. Hey, Rick, you don't make the tournament. It's on, man.
Right.
I mean, geez, that's why you're here. I forget about making the tournament. I got a couple Sweet 16 banners back on that wall.
Know.
That last one's dusty as hell.
Yeah, I get it. Rated Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan, continuing with your calls at 888-808-1019. You know, this report, remember I read the Andy Martino story before, BT, that he had this fresh news, I think that was at 11 o'clock or whatever, around there, that it is widespread belief in the industry that the Blue Jays are going to have the highest bid. Dude, that's going to be a problem here. I mean, Cohen could get away with not getting Juan Soto. He cannot get away with not having the highest bid. I don't care how rich the Blue Jays are, and I don't really believe they're a legit threat to sign Juan Soto, but if they have the highest bid, that to me is going to be a problem for the Mets. I want the Mets to be responsible, of course, but when it comes to Juan Soto, if any other team, Toronto or other, is willing to offer X amount of money, then Steve Cohen should be willing to offer X amount more.
Yeah.
That to me is like the, you could get, he could go to the Yankees, he could go to the Red Sox or the Blue Jays for less money. It is inexcusable for anybody to outbid Steve Cohen for Juan Soto.
Well, I mean, listen, the Toronto situation is interesting because I don't think he's going there, but at the very least, he is a legitimate threat to complicate the world of everybody else, and that's the Rogers ownership group. If they just keep going up and up, and they're playing a long game because, like Cohen, they've got the funds to do it, more so than the Yankees and the Red Sox. Toronto's number two in terms of their ownership overall worth, and they just play that game. I don't think Juan Soto wants to go play for Toronto Blue Jays team that's about to lose Vlad Guerrero with a year to go and free before he hits a free agency and some other pieces that really haven't produced the way they thought. Some aging players, starting pitching, I mean, different, completely different tax system, different country. You really want to go to Toronto?
Nah, he's
not. He doesn't. But he's no sucker, so he's going to play them. And the more, that's why I think when people kind of just dispel Toronto as a threat, it's not a threat for him to go. It's a threat to make life tougher on the Yankees and the Mets.
Meaning that they're going to have to up their bid significantly. If I ask you right now, give me your guess, top three offers for Juan Soto.
I think Toronto's going to be number one. I think the Mets are going to be number two. And I think the Red Sox will be number three.
Dude, now it shifts from Cohen to Hal. Like, that's unacceptable.
But I've got a different response to that. That wouldn't bother me as much.
To be outbid by three teams?
What have I always said, Sal?
This is the Yankees.
Well, I get that. Now, my consistency with this particular topic might be proven, an erroneous take down the road here because it really complicates the Yankees' future. But I don't want to give him 15 years.
Okay.
I don't want to give him 720.
But then,
not worth it.
Fair enough, but then you're not getting him.
Like, I understand
you,
that.
You think,
I said that.
Do you think if the Yankees come in at number four, and I tend to agree with this list, like, I think the Mets are going to be number one. You had Jays number one. I'm going to go Mets one, Jays two, and potentially Red Sox three, although I'm not 100%
sold. So we're pretty close in the alignment. Yankees probably four.
But that's embarrassing. If it ends up like that, like, I'd at least give Hal a little bit of a break if it's just the Mets and the Jays who outbid. You can't get outbid by the Red Sox.
Well, I mean, at that point, what does it matter? Now we're just splitting hairs. Like, if you're outbid so significantly by the Mets and the Blue Jays, which I believe there's a chance that they will be, what's it matter if the Red Sox over 20 million, what, perception? But I'm not in the game of perception. You either get them or you don't. And the Yankees have to. And I know that they do. You've got to have a conviction. As hard as it's going to be, and the Yankees are going to get crushed in the court of public opinion if they don't retain Soto, especially if he goes to Queens or the Red Sox. You've got to remain married to your convictions. And now, I can't speak to their convictions. I think that it's in the same neighborhood as mine. My conviction is very clear because I've said it for a month on the air. If it gets to that point, take him. He's not worth that kind of money. He's not.
BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Tony's in the Bronx. What's up, Tony? Tony?
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Tony, what's going on, buddy?
All right, Tony is not there, and we'll just continue having the conversation with ourselves. Poorly produced by Hoff, as one would say. Nice to see Hoff. Happy Thanksgiving. Hoff. Good to have you back.
Get crushed.
I
got a question for you. Speaking of Hoff here, right?
No hat, Hoff?
No. Oh, he looks like a very... He's going like a 1940s black tie event, the way his hair is parted to the side. Very interesting comb over today, Hoffy. So I have a question, or more of an observation. When Hoff does the Giants, and we try to tell him this, and you brought this up on the air the other day, like he does does these videos, and you see up his nostrils. You can see how many hairs he has, and you can see, like, his...
Not a fan of those.
No, you can basically see his brain. He puts the phone right under his nostril. Yeah. So, yesterday, right, he's got those little floating Jets and Giants, like, TikTok emojis that rotate.
Yeah.
All right, so the Giants played on Thursday. He's back from Dallas. Do you have to let the whole world know that you're on your couch watching the Jets play? Like, oh, finally a free football Sunday. Who cares?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's nice to watch him sit back and watch that.
Yeah, I never think about it. Like it's a pressing need that we need to know that he's home on his couch watching the Jets rather than traveling or at MetLife watching the Giants.
So opposed to other social media, that's much more important.
Yeah. Well, look at Dove chiming in from the top rope.
All the social media.
He's defending me. I like that.
Yeah,
he
look at you two. Yeah. Building a bond. I like to see it. All right, let's get back to the phones here. Sal's in Brooklyn. What's up, Sal?
Sal.
What up, boys? Hoping the holiday Thanksgiving weekend went well for everybody.
Yep. Yes. We reached our expiration this morning. It was like, all right, I'm ready to go back to work.
No, yeah, no, I was ready to roll. I couldn't wait to come in today.
Hey, I'll tell you, I did 2 days of pressure with the wife. A day and a half of eating and a day and a half of cleaning.
I ate for 3 days, man. I think I put on 5 pounds.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I ate a lot.
These leftovers all day.
Feel a little thick around the belly today. I really am.
Yeah, good, man. Work it off.
No, not good.
I said it last week. I did say last week, 7:30, 7:40 is the winner for this guy.
Oof.
It is, in my estimation. Hey, listen, if you give him $50 million 14 years, you're at $700 million, correct?
Yeah, and I'd say good riddance. You can have him. Not interested.
No, you don't say that.
That's what I say.
The Yankees, honestly. No, I got you. Oh. But if you're the Yankees, just what is this guy going to do to raise the value of your club? You went from George Biner for $10 million to being the second highest franchise, and then you get this guy on board. All you're going to do is elevate the franchise.
How much
you
more?
You can't worry about pinching pennies now.
Well, I understand, but with the elevation, and we can't possibly quantify this now, it's just kind of guesswork, but the elevation of the product, would that be offset by committing $700 million to Juan Soto? The Yankees' valuation was through the roof without Juan Soto.
But it's still the Yankees, and they shouldn't be... First of all, the Yankees shouldn't be outbid, period, for a player that they want. It's the New York Yankees. Like, I just wouldn't accept that. You're bringing logic to the situation, which I understand. But then you could argue, with every case, like, did the Yankees need to pay Garrett Cole what they paid him? Did they need to pay Aaron Jones?
Yes, because they needed an ace. They needed an ace. That's the answer.
But
because they needed an ace.
How's that going?
But Sal, hold on. But when they did this years ago, he was 26. Right. Come on.
Oh, no, but I'm saying you don't need to commit long-term to the Mets.
To Garrett Cole?
It was to whoever. The Rays have been winning, having 91.
Now, the Yankees needed an ace. Every great Yankee team, and listen, you know, they since 2020, they've spent more money on free agency than everybody but the Dodgers. Mets are in the top five as well since 2020. So they needed Garrett Cole because they needed an ace, because every great Yankee team has an ace, whether it's Ron Guidry, whether it's obviously Pettitte or whomever.
Sense.
What do you mean it makes no sense?
Every great Yankee team has an ace. That's ridiculous. That's why they needed Garrett Cole. They got Garrett
Cole. They didn't have an ace.
They got Garrett Cole because they thought it was going to put him over the top.
That's what I mean.
It has
no, but wait, hold on. You're conflating multiple things. The reason why they got Garrett Cole is because in their mind, even though it hasn't come to fruition, I obviously know that they haven't won, they're saying, all right, we want to win a World Series. We need a horse at the top of rotation who's 28 years old who strikes out 250 guys.
Understood, but you could also say the same thing about Juan Soto.
No, they already have a great player in Aaron Judge.
Well, then
that's the difference.
You didn't need Aaron Judge and extend that money. Like, your issue is you're not saying because they already have Aaron Judge, because Soto's better than Judge. I'm sorry.
He's better? Did he hit 320? Did he hit 58 bombs? Did he win the MVP? How is he better?
Let me finish. He's a better investment than Aaron Judge. He's 26 years old, and what he does better than anybody in the sport. Judge is older and getting older and has been injury prone, whatever. You're going to have to move him from center field at some point. Like, did the Yankees have to, by your logic of, well, I'm not going to give him, I'm going to draw the line at 650, he's not worth that, or 700 million. Guess what? They could have drawn that line at Judge, too. They didn't. They didn't have to trade for John Carlos Stanton. They did. They could have drawn the line on Carlos Rodon. They didn't. They could have done what the Mets did last year. They got Carlos Rodon instead of waiting to value maybe pitchers who are looking to maximize their contract value for 1 year and then go out there and cash in big. Take the chance on guys who have a prove-it deal for 1 year. They didn't do that. So why now are you going to draw the line with Juan Soto? It makes no sense.
Because they're not a player away. They are multiple players away. They've got to get a lot, dude.
But they already signed the great Aaron Judge and Garrett Cole, and they traded for Stanton. Like,
oh, but forget about Stanton. We got to push this forward. We feel the same way about Stanton. The Judge is a no-brainer. He's an all-time Yankee. He's got to do it in October, but he's an old-time. He's going to hit 500 bombs. He's going to win 3-4 MVPs as a Yankee. No-brainer.
But Stanton does factor in because of the money.
Well, I understand that. Like, there's always a residual you know, interference.
It shouldn't because it's the Yankees.
Yeah, I don't push back on that. Like, there shouldn't be hardcore limitations. When you talk about the Yankees just as a general premise, it should, because it used to be, hey, whatever we want, we get. You know, whatever we need, we get. We want Giambi, we want this guy. Yeah, go out and get him. Sure, we got enough money, got them all.
They used
go
to pay him. More than market value. Now they're not they even did. Paying market value.
No, they did. The economics of the game have changed. Other teams have scouted differently. They've developed players differently. The starting pitcher is minimized compared to what it used to be. Like, the analytics have over. Like, so baseball's changed. So the Yankees don't have to spend $500 gazillion to win a championship. Hal is right about that. And listen, I never want to blur this. I want Soto to stay. I want to watch him bat second and Aaron Judge third for the next 4 or 5 years and obviously do their thing and inflict damage on everybody. And hopefully they get a left fielder and hopefully they get a second baseman and a first baseman and a third baseman and they do what they got to do to make sure that they can win a World Series. But if it's just Soto, and that's really my fear, like if it's just Soto for a glob of money and then maybe, I don't know, some patchwork, you know, a first baseman, they're not going to win. They're not going to win next year because Stanton's contract is still here. They'll owe Soto. They'll still owe Soto. They'll still owe Judge. They'll still owe Gerrit Cole. Like, I guess what I'm saying is I'm ready to get off the train of ridiculous contracts, and I do think that the Soto contract's going to become a little ridiculous. That's all I'm saying. Amazing hitter, but that contract's going to be insane.
Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan, 888-808-1019. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers. We started the show with that way back at 10 a.m. In case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. And just to reiterate, you know, to me, I'm not saying that Rodgers has been great. He hasn't. He has looked old. He has looked slow. Well, guess what? He is old, and he is slow. He's not Superman. I don't know what everybody expected. And to point the blame at him, to think that this is all on Aaron Rodgers or make him the focal point, to me, is just ridiculous. The number, BT, that you brought up before that we saw with the tweet, oh, 0-5 when Rodgers has had the ball with the last chance. Yeah, well, how many of those times did the defense put them in a bad spot? The defense stinks. You can pick out individuals, the entire thing. Special teams have been atrocious. The head coaching, there hasn't been any, whether it's Saleh, whether it's Ulbrich. The offensive line isn't very good. Breece Hall with his fumbles. Garrett Wilson not running proper routes. Davante Adams being washed up. Like, I'm not absolving Rodgers from the blame, but it is everything. And to think that any other quarterback would have done anything with this disastrous mess of the New York Jets, to me, is just wrong. So I'm defending Rodgers because I think it's gone way too one-sided now with anti-Rodgers, where in reality, this team is a dysfunctional mess.
Well, we know that, and maybe it's been hijacked a little bit because all the attention that Rodgers garnered, you know, with the flirtation, are the Jets going to get him, and then the Jets contingent flying out to California and trying to convince him that I'm coming here, and then, you know, obviously going on the media tour and all the attention and looking great during training camp a year ago and then coming out the American flag at MetLife on the opener gets hurt, blah, blah, blah. Like, he was going to generate, like, if he was good, if he played well, it would be positioned as all-time great. If he was average or just slightly below average in certain spots, it would be positioned as a complete unmitigated failure, and it's probably unfair both ways. But here's what you said, what do we expect? I expected more accurate passes, to be very blunt. How many times, and I know the Jets' defense has been as culpable, certain spots more culpable, how many times, we can go through the schedule, maybe once, the Patriots game, how many times, and you got the lead yesterday too, but that was largely special teams, did the Jets' offense come out led by Rodgers and go up 7-0? Or go up 10, like give the defense, and I'm not saying the defense would have held it, but Rodgers as the quarterback never starts games well by getting the Jets in the end zone with any sort of frequency, and he's 0-5 with a chance to win it on the final drive of the football and possessing the football. So he doesn't start well, and he doesn't finish well. That's just not good.
Right, but why are we saying he?
Well, because he's the quarterback, what we do. Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen.
Well,
but
why with Rodgers is it not, well, what about the offensive line? Where with Daniel Jones for 6 years, it was about everything but the quarterback. Now, with the guy who's actually won a Super Bowl and 4 MVPs, it's not the offensive line. Can't be them. It's not the running back. Can't be him and his fumbles. Can't be Garrett Wilson. Oh no. It's not Garrett Wilson or Davante Adams. It's the quarterback. So it's odd to me how we could sit here in this town, different team, but still same principle, 6 years with Daniel Jones, who has accomplished nothing in comparison to Aaron Rodgers, and make every damn excuse in the book. It's not him. It's this. It's that. It's them. It's him. It's her. It's him. All that. Never Daniel Jones. Yet with Rodgers, who's won a Super Bowl and has won 4 MVPs, and it's him. It's all him. He can't drive them down the field. He can't make the right throws. He can't get them off to a good start. That to me is just not right.
But those three things that you just said are true.
Yeah.
Like, those things are true. He doesn't get him off to quick starts. He doesn't throw accurately anymore, and he doesn't finish games. Those are all true statements.
Yeah, but why is it? Is it because he can't play, or is it because they aren't good?
I'm telling you.
Do you think the offensive line is good?
First of all, I think they nailed it with Fashanu. Yeah. I mean, I was watching something this morning, and his pass protection was great.
That's great.
No, the O-line's not. Okay. I understood.
The offensive line's not any good. You think Breece Hall's been overrated, maybe a smidge?
Well,
forget
about being overrated. He just hasn't played well. Like, I don't get wrapped up in the scout.
That's fine.
He's a start running back. He's got six fumbles, six drops. The answer is no, he's not playing well.
Correct. Okay.
We could do this chapter and verse. I'm not pushing back on the fact that the other Jets didn't do their job enough but still, even with all that went awry, 5 games, 0-1, 0-2, 0-3, 0-4, 0-5 with a chance to win it,
how many of those did they have a lead before the defense's final possession?
I don't know, and just specific to that stat, because that's really how quarterbacks are judged. Think about how we elevate or why we elevate Eli Manning. Of course, the two Super Bowls have done that, but Eli always had pretty good clutch stats. I think a year or two, certainly one, maybe two, he led the NFL in fourth quarter comebacks. Like, that's kind of a thing. Like, the great quarterbacks, or at least the good quarterbacks, find a way to win when you're down 3 or down 7 to tie it up late. You got the football, you got, 70 yards to go, you got 2 timeouts, you got $120, $140. The great ones get you in the end zone. Rodgers 0-5. And I don't need him to be great. I don't need him to be 5-5. If he was 2-5 and the defense was a little bit better, guess what? The Jets have 8-9 wins.
Yeah, I mean, but I could also say, well, if they had a good kicker, they would have beaten the Broncos.
I know.
That's one. If they had a cornerback.
How many points did they score in that Broncos? I didn't mean to cut you off. I didn't want to move on to the next game. They scored 9 points.
But they didn't lose because of Rodgers.
But they didn't win because of Rodgers. I understand they would have scored 35 points and Zuerlein doinked them like he did. Understood.
Well, they scored 27 against the Colts and lost.
Well, I know, but that's when the season was already kind of defined. I mean, early on, the Broncos, if Aaron Rodgers, what was the score of that game? 16 something?
Which one?
The Broncos game.
10-9.
10-9. Yeah. I mean, if you score 13 points, you win.
Right.
So to eliminate Zuerlein, to me, is missing the mark. Your starting quarterback scored you 9 points.
Right.
He didn't do his job.
But I could go back in every one of these games and say, well, if Sauce Gardner makes a play in the Vikings game, the game would change. He had an interception dropped in the end zone. If he makes that play, maybe everything's changed, even with Rodgers throwing 3 interceptions. Like, there are ways here where you could, the Patriots game was the biggest monstrosity of all. A backup quarterback comes in the game and goes the length of the field to beat them.
And I crushed him. Brissett beat him with his legs and beat him with his arm. It was embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, it's not. I'm not saying he's great. He hasn't been great.
Scale of 1 to 10, what do you give him this year? Or give me a letter grade for Aaron Rodgers. All encompassing.
Well, I'd rather do the number. I think that's a better way to judge it. A letter grade, like, what are you going to give him? A C? C plus? I would say he's been a 5, maybe a 6.
Okay.
1 to 10.
Okay. I would agree. And that's horrible.
Right, but now ask me the rest of it.
Yeah, but that's
like
not...
the head coaches. Well, head coaches, both
stuff.
Of them. Negative 80. Like, they're
on the scale.
Sala was embarrassing.
But we knew that coming into the year, Sal. We knew that. We said that. And you even said it before me. You said he shouldn't be bad.
All right. But
so we knew that Sala stunk, although actually they were better with Sala. I mean, so.
Right, but what did we expect Rodgers to be a 10? I mean, maybe.
No, I expected Rodgers to be a 7.5 or 8.
All right, so I'm saying 5-6, and we expected him to be maybe 7-8 best.
But if he wasn't 8, they'd be a playoff team.
What about the rest? The offensive line? Oh, BT. There isn't a quarterback. Dead, retired, alive, that has ever walked the face of this great earth that could turn this Jets team into a playoff team. That's how bad they are. Like, you name them. Tom Brady in his prime, Joe Montana, Elway, line them all up. There isn't one of those guys who could take this sad excuse for a football team to the playoffs.
Yeah, but hold on. Now what we're doing is we're looking at the end result, which is a sad excuse for a football team. But in real time, it's got to be a different evaluation. Because in real time, I guarantee Tom Brady's finding a way to squeak out 17 points and beat the Denver Broncos and find a way to beat the Indianapolis Colts and find a way to score more than 6 points against the Arizona Cardinals, who were 19th or 20th in the NFL in overall defense. I mean, those guys, Peyton Manning would have done it. Tom Brady would have done it. Like, these older players. Brett Favre did it until he got hurt.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers did it with Green Bay.
That's the point.
Yeah, well, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady did it with good teams. This Jets team, not a good team. the penalties, the defense, the special teams, they go, like all those things. I don't care if you place whoever in the prime of their career on this team stinks. To me, they need more of a head coach. Like if I had one wish, it would be that they had a real head coach. Then we could really see. And then maybe you get to a level of, hey, they're winning some games, but really Rodgers not being able to take his game to the next level is holding them back. Like the idea that they could have been dangerous in the postseason or a playoff team was predicated on Rodgers being an 8 or a 9, not a 6 or a 7. So in reality, if his best is 6 or 7, maybe that would have held them back. That would have been a different story. This is not that. There are 0 everywhere else.
Listen, with all their deficiencies, and there's a million of them, with all those glaring holes that need to be addressed and fixed here, if Aaron Rodgers finds a way to score three or four more touchdowns this year, the Jets are still fighting for a wild card spot.
Yeah, or I could say, well, if somebody else would not.
We could go all day. I hear you. I'm just blaming the quarterback who's making $40 million a year and supposed to be an all-time great.
And you're not alone, and which is why it's bothering me. It's just the incorrect nature of pinning it all on Aaron Rodgers at this point.
No, it's not all when I acknowledge all the other stuff.
Right.
It's not all.
No,
it's just he's the bigger target for me. That's where we differ.
Right, but it was the same thing last year where everybody was saying, well, if they just had a different quarterback.
And by the way, they were 7-4 without Rodgers.
Right.
Before things went really awry.
Right. So then
they won more games.
So then that should tell you that it's not just about the quarterback.
No, with this team it is, though.
No, but the numbers, everybody was saying last year, it's the worst quarterback play in the history of the league.
Defense was better.
Not just the
defense was so much better.
Okay, but now
so
we're getting
so much better.
Agreed. Now we're getting somewhere. So then it can't just be Rodgers.
No.
It's the defense as well.
I'd say it's just Rodgers.
The defense was, I know that, but that's the bigger, like, people are missing. Good, Rodgers is going to be out of here. Everybody's
do you want to see him play football for the Jets next year, yes or no?
I don't want to watch the Jets, period,
but if
ever
you have
again.
To watch the Jets next year, do you want to watch Rodgers, yes or no?
I think the Jets will be worse off at quarterback than having Aaron Rodgers next year is the way that I would put it.
And I would say I think it's a little bit of a murky answer, but I think that there will be, and which is where we differ, there will be options out there that will elevate the quarterback play.
Unless it's a young, exciting rookie, and even then, I don't think that it's...
I'll take Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
Honestly, I will. I'll take Daniel Jones for a year. I've said that.
Yeah, I'm out on both those guys.
I think we're watching two different Rodgers. We'll both agree the Jets stink everywhere else. Aaron Rodgers has stunk this year. He just has. I know we got a break.
Yeah.
The amount of throws that he's missed is ridiculous. I mean, 3 yards off, 3 feet off target. There's Garrett Wilson wide open. Up, Rodgers threw it behind him. There's Davante Adams down the sideline. Up, overshot him by 3 yards. I mean, he hasn't been good.
And we'll see if the next guy can be any better. We know the Jets will find him if they're out there. BT and Sal on the Fan will continue with your calls on the other side. Right now, let's get you updated. Here's Andrew Bogut.
WFAN, WFAN-FM, WFAN-FM HD1, New York, and Odyssey Sports Station.
WFAN Sports Flash.
Brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Download the Hard Rock Bet app and roll with us. Good afternoon at 1 o'clock. I'm Andrew Bogish. We're also sponsored by SupplyHouse.com. SupplyHouse.com carries a wide selection of heating parts.